do want to tell you that in the first hour this morning, before things started, I saw a group over in the corner laughing their heads off. And a little bit later, one of my spies came to tell me that apparently there is a YouTube video that shows a 9-year-old boy who goes through the meaning and significance of all of the scriptures in 9 minutes. And they were comparing that to what we're doing. Now, number two, Barbara and I had a meal together this week outside the house, which we don't always do. And on the table, they put this little thing that let me have something to read while we were doing things. And I noticed in here a piece of information I was not aware of before.
Apparently, it is the case that in weddings in Turkey, according to this article, weddings in Turkey, part of the wedding ceremony is for the bridegroom to promise the bride that he will always supply her with coffee. You know, you've heard of Turkish coffee. I didn't know this. Did you know this? And apparently, if he does not provide her with coffee, that's grounds for divorce. That was my reaction. That was my reaction too. I thought that was pretty good.
I thought you said that was a better response. Like, maybe it's better than the last person.
Maybe. Now, I need to review very quickly where we were last week. There's a couple of people who may not have been with us, and I want to make sure that we catch you up. So, those of you who were here last week, that's 2 out of 3 over here, and something of that same proportion out here. We were looking at Exodus 3 and Exodus 4, and what I tried to help you see was that what is recorded here is the call of Moses. Moses is being called by God into service. And the call of Moses, I made 2 very audacious statements. One is, everybody who is alive gets a call from God into service. It isn't just God's children. Sometimes you become God's child because you respond to God's call. And secondly, people have apparently the free will to refuse God's call. And therefore, that the call of Moses would not be perfectly repeated, but would be in pattern repeated for everybody, including you. So I want to begin this morning by reviewing the nature of that call. Where did it start? A bush was burning, but it wasn't consumed. The first step in the call is what? God gets our attention. Moses said, that's funny, went over to see what it was, and the second step took place. What was that? God said, that's close enough. Take off your shoes. This is holy ground. The next thing you know, Moses' face is on the ground. What's the second step? God leads us to worship. What's the first step? It seems that you all didn't pick up all of this last week. He gets our attention and then leads us to worship. What's the third step? God began to reveal need in the world, in this particular case, the problems in Egypt. And for a while, Moses would have been rejoicing. This is great. Took you a while, but wonderful. What's the first step? Gets our attention. Second step? Leads us to worship. Third step? Reveals need in the world. And then number 4 comes. What's that? He calls you to meet that need. And that's when Moses started backing up. And as Moses backs up and starts putting his excuses forward, God begins to do the 5th step, which is to equip you. How does God equip you? Number 1, God gives you his presence. Number 2, God's power begins to be visible in you. Not your power. Not you. But God begins to be visible. God's power begins to be apparent. And the things that are happening, things you no way you were going to do those. And then what's the third one? The most important of that last part. He begins to put other people beside you so that together, because God always works in community. God doesn't work with lone rangers. He works in community. He puts other people. Who was the first person he put alongside of? He put Aaron, his brother. Now, do you remember from last week the answer to the question, why did the bush burn that particular day? because that's the day Aaron was coming. 40 years apart, Aaron slips out of Egypt, and the day that Aaron arrives to meet him, because at the highlight of this thing, God gets angry because the excuses are piling too high, and God is ready for Moses to walk. And Moses, God says to Moses, look, there's your brother Aaron coming to meet you. And I'd like to start for just a minute right there. Would you please look at chapter 4, verse 27? Yes, ma'am.
Real quick. God puts you A. What was A again?
Let's go back and review. This won't hurt you. What was number one? God gets your attention. Number two?
Calls you to worship.
Number three? Reveals need in the world. And up to that moment, it's not real threatening. But number four, the bottom drops out. He calls you to meet that need. He puts a burden on your heart. And then he says, nah, I'm going to work through you to address that problem. And what's number five? He begins to equip you. And the equipping begins with his presence. And then his power begins to act in you and through you. And what's the third one? He begins to bring people alongside of you, or he begins to bring you alongside of people. Take your choice which way you say that, because he's always working through bodies of people, not through individuals.
Okay? It's interesting that he in fact calls you to meet that need. He puts that burden on your heart before he begins the equipping process. And so many people... Well, that call and they say, but I can't do that. I'm not equipped.
That's where the excuses come, and the excuses begin to crumble as the equipping starts. And you start to realize, I can't do this. And that will stay true, but maybe God and I together can.
But that's what's so important, is to realize you can't do it. Because if you think you're the one doing it, then it's not God's work.
So often...
I do this so often, as I think of a wonderful thing for service and I start working, I say, God, may I bless this. Mm-hmm. It's totally backwards. You've got to realize, here's something to do. I can't do it. And then God is the one that does it.
Henry Blackaby's phrase at this point is, find out where God is working. You know, go join him there. Many people know that phrase. Okay? Did you find verse 27? Is it interesting to you? The Lord said to Aaron, go out into the desert to meet Moses. So Aaron went and met Moses at the mountain of God and kissed him. Wait a minute. I thought that meeting took place verses before. It did. This is the writer's attempt to have you understand God was working with Aaron to bring him to this meeting. He was working with Moses to bring him to this meeting. And he's shown you the meeting with Moses just before he goes back and fills in the background. Why was Aaron there? Not because he felt like a trip. He's there because God sent him. And now they partner alongside.
Where did Aaron come from? Was he a slave in Egypt?
I assume so. I assume he had to slip out under threat of death. I think he escaped. Dark of night, swimming rivers.
This weekend just dawned the first time. But that's, I assume where he had to come from.
Yeah. I don't think he had seen him in 40 years. I think the day he ran after the killing that was revealed to Pharaoh, and he ran for his life, I don't think he had seen Aaron in all that time. I have a sense that he may have known Aaron was coming, and that sensitized him to that bush. But I think the bush burned on that day, because that's the day Aaron finished his journey and made it to that place. I don't know for sure if Moses would have known that Aaron was coming. I think it could have caught him off. It could have been either way. All right? All right. So you ready for today? Question one. What would have happened if Moses had not turned aside to see that bush?
That probably would have gotten attention.
Okay, answer one is God might have gotten his attention another way. What else? Maybe God would have had the opportunity for service past Moses by. I don't know. A lot hangs in the balance right there. That's where free will stands. But Moses did turn aside. And at step four, the excuses start to fly. I'd like us first to agree on what the excuses were. What was the first one? Nope, that is not the first one. The first one is in chapter 3, verse 11. What's the first one? Who am I? Why me? What's number 2? This is in verse 13 of chapter 3. Verse 13, verse 14.
What to tell him if he didn't know what to say to
him? Yeah, but it starts out very specifically. Starts out very specifically. I don't even know your name. I want you to get these in your mind. The first excuse is, who am I to do that? The second excuse is, I don't even know your name. What's number 3? And it comes close on the heels of this. Verse 1 of chapter 4.
What if they don't believe me or listen to me?
Two parts. What if they don't listen to me? And what if they don't believe me if they do listen? Now, my translation, it reverses those two. What if they don't believe me? What if they don't listen to me? And I think listen to me maybe is a parallel for the word believe. If they don't heed me, maybe it's is a better translation of that word. But what if they don't listen? What if they don't listen?
Bill, like Russell, I grew up in this church, but I came here in fourth grade. And I grew up every year watching Marsha Franz perform this to music. And I sat in the audience in awe. I thought I'd say that out loud. I love this whole...
Those of us who have been in here, wow. And if you've been here a little bit longer, you might have heard Ken Miedema do it, the one who wrote it, because he came to our church and he did this. I actually heard him at another church in town about that same time. What's the fourth one? Verse 10 of chapter 4. Now, Cameron.
I don't speak well.
I'm not a good speaker. What's the problem?
Stutters.
Slow of speech and problems.
I'm slow of speech and tongue. Okay? Are we in agreement that these are the big four? The fifth one, and there is a fifth one, is not so much an excuse. It's more of a plea. Verse 13 of chapter 4.
Send somebody else.
Anybody else, please God.
It's a plea. Oh, my Lord, send, I pray, some other person, is what my scripture says. You can almost hear Moses going, please, not me.
Sydney, you got the message?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a great sentence to use? Hey, Sydney, you got the message? You want to read just...
Pastor, please, send someone else. And God got angry.
Yep. And God got angry. Why did God get angry? Starts with I. I don't know. Now, having said that, we can speculate. There comes a point where the excuses have gone on too long. There comes a point when the excuses have gone on too long. Yes, he has excuses. And God is answering those excuses. He's providing the steps that we talked about. That equipping process is coming all the way through here. The equipping starts real early. Yeah. And Moses' excuse is, but I didn't know I was getting ready. Okay. And just on that point, I hadn't thought to do this in the first hour, but since you mentioned that, what has he been doing for the last 40 years? Herding sheep where? All over the wilderness area. What's going to happen for the next 40 years? He's going to wander around. He's learning where the water holes are. He's learning where the paths are. He's learning where the places are to stop and the places are not to stop. Right? He doesn't realize he's being prepared, but he is. So let's walk through here. What was God's response to the first excuse? You know where it is now. What was God's response? chapter 3, verse 11. I think this is chapter 3, verse 12. I'm going to be with you. And I'll tell you how you know that all this happened. You're going to be back here with a couple of million people. And you're going to worship at the foot of this mountain, right here where we're standing right now. You're going to be back. And when you come back, you're going to say, huh, he was with me. And is with me. What's the answer to the second one? I don't know your name. God gives you two answers. Did you notice this? What's the first answer? I am who I am. There is a quip that is old and cliched and hackneyed, but it still catches it better than anything. God created us in his image, and we've been returning the favor ever since. Think it through, guys. God created us in his image, and we've been returning the favor ever since. We're making God in our image, and he comes out too small. God is who he is, and it's other. Now, he gives a second answer. What's the second answer?
I am sent to
you. Yeah, but keep going. There's a little bit more.
The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of David, has sent me to you.
I'm the God of your ancestors. I'm the one you learned about at your mother's knee. I'm the one you've heard about from your father-in-law since you've been here, the priest of God here in Midian. Chapter 4, verse 1. Suppose they won't listen to me or believe me. God has him do a couple of things. What are those things? The first hour I remember to mention two of them, but there's actually three. What's the first one? Take your rod, throw it on the ground. What does the rod do? It becomes a snake. What does Moses do when it becomes a snake?
He runs away from it.
Runs away. I think that's the best. One translation said backed off. One says recoiled. One says ran away. I think ran away is the best one. Might run away looking back at the snake, but you know, you can run backwards. Okay. And what does God say? First thing God says.
Put out your hand.
First thing God says. Ooh, it's not in this translation. It's in two others. There's two other translations. The first thing he says is stop. Then he says, reach out. You're right, my translation doesn't have that either, but it's in some of the ones that I looked at. Stop. Pick it up. And pick it up how? We're not making that up, are we? Pick it up by the tail. And when he picks it up, what happens? God's power begins to be visible in and around you. What's the second thing he does? He takes his hand, puts it inside his clothing. When it comes out, covered with leprosy, puts it in, takes it out a second time, leprosy's gone. Leprosy is one of the most fascinating subjects in the whole of the Old Testament.
I have a question about that.
Yes, sir.
It says, when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. Did he give him, did he fail the power of the Lord at that point?
Can I answer you with a joke?
Sure.
Is that okay? There's a guy goes into church with a withered hand. And he prays, dear Lord, make this hand like the other one. Okay? When you pray that prayer, make this hand like the other one, it can go this way or it can go this way. Okay? I think what it's saying is his hand became like the rest of his flesh. I don't think it was happening to the whole of his flesh. I think it was on the hand.
His spirit didn't envelop him.
I don't think so. But I think it was leprosy. Now, interestingly enough, leprosy in the Old Testament, I think, is a parallel to sin in the New Testament. Leprosy cannot be cured. It cannot be cured. But later on, under Moses' guidance and under Moses' conversations with God, God gives them a ceremony in which you celebrate when someone has been cured of leprosy. It can't happen, but we've got a ceremony for when it does. And God is saying, I can do that. Nobody else can. And I can do it through you. What's the third one? Take water from the Nile. I'm sorry, where was the Nile?
Egypt.
It's way over there. He did the first two. He did not do the third one. Right? He doesn't have Nile river water there. And what's going to happen? Pour it out on the ground, and what does it become?
Blood.
What does blood symbolize?
Jesus. sacrifice.
Judgment. In this context, it symbolizes judgment. More than it does sacrifice, I think. God gives him three. Do any of you know what the number three represents? That represents divinity. Our Trinity is an echo of that. And I think you have the sense here. He gave him these three. And the implication is, and as many more as you need, but understand this is from God. There's three of them. This is from God. Okay? What does he say in response to the fourth one? I can't speak so good. Or maybe more accurately, I can't, and I don't want to make fun of stuttering. I can't speak so good. What does God say?
I will be with your mouth and teach you.
Yeah. He starts out with a question.
Yeah, he says, who makes a mouth?
Who makes mouths anyway? Who's responsible for the creation of mouths? Who makes it possible for people to speak or not speak? Who makes it that people see or don't see? Who makes it that people hear or don't hear? Don't you think I have the power to give you the speech you need at the time you need it? And that's when Moses said, send anybody else, and God gets mad. And then he says, look. And I think you can sense God pointing into the valley where the dust was. There's your brother Aaron. He's coming to meet you. He's a good speaker. You talk to him. He'll speak for you. And he uses this very interesting language. You will be as a God to him. You speak to him, and he speaks to the people. Very interesting imagery that's used there. Okay? So, here's my question. Are those our excuses when God calls us? And let me now begin with the questions. Do we know that God is with us? Do we understand that God is who he is and not what we might want him to be in order to be able to contain him? Do we understand that we have a heritage of faithful people who've gone before us, Jim Pardue being one of those? People who knew God, people who followed God, people whose acts of faithfulness made it possible for us to come to faith. Because that's what God was saying in those two answers. Are we ready to trust God for the results of our witness? Are we ready to allow his power to be revealed in us? Do we even believe that that's possible? Missionaries report they go into a place and hundreds and thousands respond. And then other missionaries report that they go into a place and they work 10 years and they've got two converts. And then you go back years later and you find out those two have turned into thousands. The little bit turned out to have been honored. Do we believe that God's power could be revealed in us at this level? Look at number four for a minute. I can't talk so good. Do we realize that we, each one of us, has a role to play in kingdom work? And do we realize that individual roles matter? Do we realize that when we put our work alongside of somebody else's work, things happen that couldn't have happened with either one of us alone? I want you to look at something for a second. And I'm not going to let you look at the context, because the context is talking about something very, very different, and it's important in its own right. So if you would find briefly 1 Samuel chapter 15, I'm going to have you look at just two verses, but I want you to see this. 1 Samuel 15, it's the first of the ones and twos. If you find any of the ones and twos, back up until you're at the first one. 1 Samuel 15. Saul has been talking to Samuel. Saul is the first king that the Israel nation has. He's talking to Samuel, the first of the prophets and the last of the judges. In verse 16, Samuel says to Saul, stop. What does he mean? He means shut up. Quit talking. And then he adds, let me tell you what the Lord said to me last night. Saul said, go on. Samuel said, small as you may be in your own eyes, Are you not the leader of the tribes of Israel? Has God not anointed you as king of Israel? Small as you may be in your own eyes. There's two problems that we face. One is a problem of overconfidence. I can do it all myself. And the other is underconfidence. I can't do anything. God can't use me for anything. This is all addressed to the second of those, to the underconfidence. You got overconfidence. This is not where you go. There's other places you go for that. I'm going to step in it pretty deep because I did it in the first hour and you might as well hear it too. A long time ago, I was sitting in my family room and I was watching on television an interview with a fairly well-known pastor. My daughter was doing her homework on the floor in front of me and I thought she was paying no attention. The interviewer said to the pastor, "What would you say if a woman in your congregation came to you and said, 'I think God is calling me to be a pastor, to be a preacher'?" There was a moment of silence, and the pastor said, "I would tell her she's mistaken. God wouldn't do that." And at that point, my daughter looked up and said, "Who is that old man?" And I thought that was almost the perfect thing to say. I do not know if God has or will ever call women to be preachers, but he could. And for anyone to say he couldn't, no. The whole Bible is full of people that you would have thought God can't possibly use them for anything, and he's using them. Look at David. They checked out seven brothers, and Samuel said, "Are there any more sons?" And Jesse basically says, "Not really. That there's this one out with the sheep, but nah, you're not going to want to see him." That was David. You look at Paul. There was a point where they were trying to find somebody to replace Judas. And the disciples got together. I can almost hear God saying, "Yeah, I got my eye on this guy, Saul. But he's killing us. Yeah, yeah. We'll work that out." So, let's now make a shift. We're not leaving the subject, but we're sort of taking a step back and we're going to come at it from another direction. Everybody ready? I want you to turn to Romans 15. And the very next book is 1 Corinthians. I want you to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Romans chapter 15, 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Romans chapter 15, verse 4. "All of these things which were written so long ago were written in order that..." What are these things that were written so long ago? The Old Testament. Including the section in Exodus that we're reading now and all the stuff we will read in the coming days. "All these things which were written so long ago were written in order that we, learning perseverance and the encouragement which scriptures give, should have hope." There's a purpose to all this stuff we're studying, all these things we're reading. The purpose is we can learn perseverance, we can gain encouragement, and thereby we can have hope. That is a positive outcome. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. The focus verse is verse 6, but I want to start at verse 1 and get a running start. "I want you to be very certain, brothers, that our ancestors, all, every one of them, had the cloud over them and all passed through the sea. In the cloud and in the sea, they were all baptized into Moses. They all ate the same spiritual food. They all drank the same spiritual drink." Verse 5, "In spite of this, God was not pleased with most of them, and their corpses were scattered over the desert." Verse 6, "These things happened as examples for us. They happened for our benefit, so that we should never set our hearts as they did on evil things." There is a positive impact from reading these things. There is a warning, a negative example that comes from these things. Okay? In Moses, we see both. All the excuses he gave were followed by Moses' obedience, Moses' responsiveness, and Moses taking the leadership that God wanted him to take. So, let's focus on this for a little bit. On the day of his call, Moses was doing what he had done every day for years. And something broke in. He noticed it. And when he noticed it, he asked, "What does that mean?" Go back and look. Those are almost the words he used. "I wonder what it means that this bush is burning and it's not consumed." When God called, Moses answered, "Here am I." And when God said, "Stop," he stopped, took off his shoes, and worshiped. And finally, after all the excuses that took place, he left there, ready to do God's work in a new place, ready to use ordinary things in new ways, ready to work with new people, ready to stand up to new challenges, ready to go where God leads him, as long as God goes with him. And he's in a new relationship with God. He is no longer thinking, "What do I do today?" He is thinking, "What is God calling me to do today?" There's a guy named Robert Creech. Robert Creech was a pastor in Houston. Before he was a pastor in Houston, he was a professor at the school that Barbara and I both attended. He's now on the faculty of the Truett School at Baylor. Preached a sermon on this way back when, and I happen to have a copy of it. Here's what he said. Things on the 11 o'clock news, things in the paper, things in the weekly news magazine, do we ever ask, what do they mean? Do we lament what is happening, or do we ask, what does it mean? Do we marvel at some of the things that are happening without ever asking, what does it mean? I'm thinking about what you said earlier today, these women that you're meeting. Ask the question, what does it mean? What's God trying to say? What does it mean that maps are being redrawn? What does it mean that governments are falling that have been oppressing their people for decades? What does it mean that things we've trusted are crumbling, our economic foundation shaking here and around the world? What does it mean that people in increasing numbers are trying to find out what the meaning is in their lives? They're asking questions and they don't think there's any answers. What does it mean that public moral values, private ones have had a problem forever, but public moral values have been in decline for 40 years or more with no sign of abating? Shift gears again. What does it mean to be part of a church in an area in which the population is growing by hundreds or thousands a year? What does it mean to be part of a church that is not like the average churches in our nation? What would it mean to be part of a church in which everyone individually and all of us collectively were seeking to encounter God, seeking to follow God, seeking to find and do His will, seeking to be a truly loving and caring community? What would that be like? Can we imagine that God could, in us and through us to those around, bring healing, restoration, refreshment, encouraging, a replacement of brokenness with wholeness, a replacement of hunger with filling, a replacement of sadness with joy, a replacement of lostness with direction and purpose, a replacement of aloneness with community? You think God is content in any way with thousands of people within 5 miles of where we are right now who have no church family, no church home, no understanding of God's Word, no connection with God's Son, no awareness of God's love, and no experience of God's presence? You think He's content with that? You think He's content with all of those around us who are enduring pain and alienation and separation because they don't know how to hold their families together and they have no idea of the resources God provides to help have that happen? Is He content with the destructive demons of alcohol and drugs and violence that seem to plague so many parts of our city? Is He content with the false gods of materialism and pleasure being so active, alluring people away from the worship of God and from the love of their Creator? You think God is ready to say, if we would but listen, their cries, their misery, their oppression has come up to me, and I'm coming down to redeem them. I'm ready to do something bigger than any of you have ever dreamed of before. And is Bon Air Baptist the place where this can happen? Are the people of this church the ones who will hear and respond? And are there others nearby who will join us like Aaron joined Moses? Should the fear and excuses of Moses be seen for what they are, the front-end human reaction that each of us probably has to God's call? but his revelation is our invitation to participate. There's two responses that you can have. One is, wow, I wish he would do things like that here. And if he ever does, then I'll join. Or maybe our reaction ought to be that we step up before we see the results, while it all still hangs in the balance, ready to be obedient to him and sensitive to his leading.
I got to love my God. It's a rod again. Smoking bushes. It's a rod again. Do you know what it means, Moses? Do you know what I'm trying to say, Moses? The rod of Moses. Free. So what do you hold?